Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If not for a problematic movie trailer, this week's guest would have entirely forgotten the existence of a massive 1997 single from Billy Myers. This hit exploded onto the radio, perhaps from being utilized in the second season of Dawson's Creek, before it quickly fell off the charts and disappeared. In this episode, filmmaker and Horror Movie Night co-host Kyle Kukta asks us all to kiss the rain. Are you sure you're there alone?
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever. And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
Kyle, welcome back to the show. Last time you were here, it was for Orgy, but this time you toned it down a little bit and you simply want to kiss the rain.
Hello. Can you hear me? I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, man.
Thank you so much. I mean, we'll get into it, but I've been really obsessed with this song. And I mean, I texted Matt about it maybe 3 months, two, 3 months ago.
It was, I think you actually texted me like 3 days after the Orgy episode dropped and was like, hey, just rediscovered this song. Wish I picked this instead.
Yeah, like, yeah. That sounds about right. And yeah, totally different vibes, but let me tell you, this one's been in my head a lot longer than Blue Monday.
I'm glad you're saying that, because a lot of times I ask the guests, like, what made you choose this song? And usually the answer is, well, Matt Kelly sent me a list of songs and I picked this one. So I'm glad.
I don't let Mr. Kelly dictate any of my shit. Okay. I go off the rails. I will say what spawned this was a movie, go figure, but not the one that we're probably going to talk about. But the one that I had saw it, we watch trailers often, like nighttime ritual. We'll throw on trailers like 20 minutes before we're going to go to bed, because like we don't want to start anything. We don't want to finish anything.
It's like previews before your dreams.
Yeah, yeah, that's very lovely. I'm gonna pitch it that way, because right now I'm like, oh, people are gonna think this is weird. But people watch weirder shit before bed. Yeah. It's not. So we do like a 90s trailers playlist. It was a movie called Molly, which I actually probably should have brought up the synopsis for, but it's one of those 90s problematic depictions of autism.
Okay.
Where somebody seemingly gets like semi-cured of their autism, but then still has autism. Like,
you sent it to me and your friend Evan, and I think we both responded at the exact same time as, oh, it's female flowers to Algernon. Like, that was, like, the vibe of that Molly trailer.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I think maybe it was Greg Kinnear's in it or somebody of the sort. And it was just, like, a clear bad depiction where they're picking and choosing, like, the ailments in which is going to make us, you know, they're just totally dismantling what autism is. It's very ignorant. But that song, man, I was like, damn. Like, what a miracle. This woman's a miracle. Well,
so here's the thing. You sent me that trailer to, like, jog my memory of the song. Yeah. And, like, I definitely know the song, but I have no clue how I know the song. And, like, Wikipedia is very not helpful. Like, it's just like it appeared in a Dawson's Creek episode and multiple other TV show commercials. And I'm like,
yeah,
well, that's...
So did every song ever.
Like, it's like, you need to give me more than that. Like, I know that I've heard this in a movie trailer that's not Molly, because I never knew that movie existed until you linked it to me. Chris, how about you? The 98 feels like... Well, 98 feels like punk or nothing era, Chris. But did you know this song?
Yeah, I recognize it. I don't know how I know it. I think it's just one of those doctor's office, not that I go to the doctor, dentist's office type of songs, or at the grocery store type of songs. I can't pinpoint where I know this from, but it's definitely just one of those songs that's in the ether that I know. Were you implying that this was in, or earlier, that this is in some bigger movie? Kyle, you said something like, we're going to be talking about a movie.
So, I mean, here's the order of which I probably should have known the song, right? It would go, Chasing Amy is where it's mostly known.
Okay.
And then Dawson's Creek, and then Molly.
but you led with Molly, and that's very...
Yeah, I started from the bottom, and now we're here.
So it is in Chasing Amy. That's right. Matt sent us a text with a YouTube, which was called a remix, which I would put in quotes, of Kiss the Rain, where it's just Ben Affleck quotes taken straight from the movie and just put over top of the music. I don't know what makes that a remix, but you're saying this is in that movie, actually.
Supposedly, yes.
Okay.
Supposedly, yes. So Chasing Amy never got a soundtrack, infamously. Like, Clerks, Mallrats, all those movies had, like, physical soundtracks. There was some issue that came up. They never put out a Chasing Amy soundtrack. But that remix gets... And yes, we're using quotes around the word remix. But that remix, like, is specifically called out in her Wikipedia page. I think it was, like, a Napster thing. Like, remember how people would, like, take songs and just throw audio quotes on them and upload them into Napster?
Okay.
Like,
so
somehow...
there's a chance that it's actually not in the movie. Is this right? Is this, like, some weird pop culture lexicon thing where it's, like,
I didn't click into the remix here, because it says...
Because I could not place it. I was just trusting the internet, which is a bad thing to do.
So it isn't listed on the wiki page. The wiki page says the film has no soundtrack album. However, many songs appear in the movie, and then it lists a bunch of songs. And I do not see Kiss the Rain in here.
But so this is basically, that remix is basically the equivalent of, like, the TikToks that are like Midwest emo version, and it'll have, like, an Alex Jones clip of him screaming about something with, like, some guy playing guitar under it. Is that the 90s equivalent of that?
It seems like this is like a first generation version of that in some capacity.
Right.
Well, maybe not first generation, but it's a relative of that scenario. Yeah. It's you know what? And honestly, I should have known. Evan, the buddy that I also sent this to, is a writer, and he's a good friend, and he also loves Chasing Amy. And he didn't clock this track.
No.
So I should have known better.
I also checked IMDb, which is usually pretty on point for the full soundtrack listing. No Kiss the Rain on there.
Okay. So Dawson's Creek, Chasing Amy, Napster remix, Molly. It's still like the order hasn't really changed.
Yeah.
The order hasn't changed that much.
This song is very Dawson's Creek.
Yeah. Super Dawson's Creek.
So she also, one of the things that made me laugh out loud was that based on the popularity of this song, she wrote the title song for the Freddie Prinze Jr. movie Down to You. Have either of you seen this mess of a movie?
Is that like a somebody came from heaven to earth type movie?
No.
Oh.
Sounds like it should be.
Yeah, I mean,
you might have written a better movie already.
I don't know, because so Down to You is Freddie Prinze Jr., Julia Stiles, Selma Blair, Ashton Kutcher, Rosario Dawson, and Henry Winkler. The movie, Henry Winkler plays a famous TV chef, and Freddie Prinze Jr. is his son. And it's just like your typical like college rom-com movie for the most part. Mm. But the thing that I always remember about the movie is that at the end, Freddie Prinze Jr. gets so depressed that he attempts to commit suicide by drinking a bottle of shampoo and getting taken away to the ambulance. And that's when him and Julia Stiles reconnect.
Is it a joke, like a suicide joke? Played up seriously?
He drinks a bottle of shampoo and then he's lying on the ground having a conversation with a spider that's crawling across the ground about how he's regretting this decision. And then I also remember Harry Winkler pitches a cooking show based around cops where they just storm into someone's house and start cooking for them unannounced.
I'm just looking at this Miramax. So okay, so Billy Myers.
Yeah,
is that who we're talking about? I'll never get that name.
Billy
right.
Myers.
Clearly in Miramax's pocket because of the vibes of this of their singing. But that movie looks awful.
I forgot. Freddie Prinze Jr.'s roommate throughout the film has an explosive career as a prolific porn actor and then director. He's a film school student who just starts doing it on the whim. And it's a ridiculous movie. It's right in that pocket of like 2000 teen comedy where it's like, all right, we've said all we could say with 10 Things I Hate About You and She's All That. We need to really up the ante a little bit more.
God, it just seems so chaotic. It just seems like a chaotic.
Why are we
time.
Talking about this movie again? Is Kiss the Rain in this movie?
No, she wrote the title track for it. Like they were like, we need someone to write
and
a theme
chart,
song.
Clearly.
And they brought her. Listen, there's going to be plenty of tangents in a second, but we'll focus on her for a little bit. So she started off as a nurse and then an insurance agent before she was just discovered in 1997.
Okay. Yeah. All right. What was the discovery? Where was the discovery?
At a club.
Okay.
Which,
good.
If you listen to a bunch of her music, makes sense she was found at a club because pretty much right after this album, she really started to lean into more club and house music with her later music.
Okay.
Hey, my mind was just blown this very second.
Oh, did you see who the writers were on this song?
Well, yeah, I knew Desmond Child was a writer on it, and Billy Myers is also a writer on it, but freaking Eric Bazillion is a writer on this. Kyle,
Chris, he also performed every instrument on the track.
Oh, my God. Kyle, do you know who Eric Bazillion is?
No, you got to fill me in.
So, listen, Eric Bazillion is from the Hooters, the band The Hooters, who sang And We Danced.
Yeah, yeah.
Had him as a guest on Krista Makes a Podcast. He, before he came on the show, was like, oh, I'm surprised you want to do And We Danced, because I figured you guys would want to do...
What If God Was One of Us
by
Joan Osborne, because he wrote that.
He wrote he wrote One of Us by Joan Osborne. So, we did an episode about Joan Osborne, and... our guest on that had, I don't know if he like messaged him or what, posted about it, maybe tagged Eric Bazillion in it. Eric Bazillion listened to the whole episode and was just like typing to Josh throughout the episode, like, oh, this is cool. Oh, this, like telling him things as he was listening to it.
Oh my God.
Then he messaged me on our personal Instagram just to say how much he liked the episode.
Did he?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I sent you the screenshot of it. He said, hey man, sorry that I never got back to your email. Be sure to resend it.
Here we come back again. Freaking Eric Bazillion is a songwriter and player on Kiss the Rain.
I love the through line here.
Yeah.
And clearly, I mean, we're talking about like some excellent songs too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's because... you guys have done this. This is your podcast. You've run into some shit. You've run into some stuff that's not great.
Right.
And like, here I come. This song's been stuck in my head for 3 months. and like, clearly it's a great song. That is so cool. We're gonna have to make sure that he knows that this episode comes out.
I can't wait for him to hear me tell that. Stands. I can't wait for him to hear me tell that story again.
Again.
For the
Eric
for the second
here.
Time. So one of the best pieces of music trivia I think I've ever pulled up in the history of researching for this podcast is the origins of the song Kiss the Rain.
Yeah.
We love an origin story.
In which apparently Desmond Child came up with the name of the song. So I guess he pitched the idea. Billy wrote a draft and then maybe Eric came and punched it up or something. But apparently the name Kiss the Rain came from Desmond Child mishearing the lyrics to Bush's Glycerine and thinking the song was called Kiss the Rain.
Kiss the Rain.
I try to do it often and I can't quite figure it out. Like, I mean, that's as close as to what it sounds like in my head, but I know the Bush song too well to try to alter it in my brain.
Well, maybe Desmond saw that. Matt, you're such a 90s MTV guy. You might remember this. Maybe Desmond Child saw that performance of Gavin Rossdale. I think it was at MTV Spring Break, maybe.
It's such a good performance.
And it's pouring down rain, and it's just him?
Oh, no. That's Woodstock 99.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure the shirtless... Or no. You're right. That was MTV, because... Yeah. Woodstock 99 was dreaming that rain would come down upon them during that entire weekend.
Put out a few of those fires.
Yeah. Please. Yeah, no. That was, I was thinking if there's a spring break one where it's during the day and they're like performing like outside of, you know, the pool where they would do MTV's The Grind. Like they've got like a little stage set up by that pool.
Yeah.
And I remember them playing like Little Things and Everything Zen. Man, yep. Bush played a lot on MTV. Actually.
Yeah.
Kind of surprising in my mind. Like, I don't know. I never like lump Bush into that, but like they also had a lot of hits.
I was going to say 16 Stone. It was like every track they put out was like a top 10 hit on the alternative radio, at least for a bit.
That's true.
And then Razorblade Suitcase came out.
I can't get Kiss the Rain to be Glycerine.
Don't let the days go by.
Oh, man.
Kiss the Rain.
Kiss the Rain.
You have to be like, Kiss the Rain. It has to be marble mouth. And dude, I got to stop you for a second. I can't stop thinking about the fact of being an Eric Bazillion stan and thinking about the song Stan, like, Dear Eric, you're on my podcast. Yeah. Thought you were cool. I wrote you an email about my band. What's up with you?
As long as I don't end up in a trunk, dude, I'm good. Like, Matt probably is going to end up in the trunk of all things.
There wasn't a ton really out there about Billy. Like, I listened to a lot of her music, but like the main places that I go to for research, which admittedly is 90% Wikipedia.
Oh, like, Jesus Christ.
Is usually pretty limited. But I did see this one thing that I wanted to talk about, because Billy has spoken about being bisexual and has participated in a lot of LGBTQ things. And something I thought was kind of cool was that she did perform in front of the March for Equality in 2009. She opened up the event by singing America the Beautiful, which we'll get into in a second. But beforehand, she actually criticized then President Barack Obama, because the night prior at the Human Rights Campaign dinner, she felt he failed to mention the importance of marriage equality while there was a battle going on for same-sex marriage in Maine at that very moment.
Well, he made good on that. He made good on
he
that
did.
Eventually.
That's what I mean.
Maybe it was all because Billy Myers said something. Barack went back to the Oval Office, put on Kiss the Rain, had a real pensive moment. And he's like, you know what? Gay people should be able to get married.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
You can add this song to any moment in time. I could be washing dishes and Kiss the Rain could be playing and you could be like, damn, that dude's thinking about shit.
Yeah.
Like that dude this is a life-changing moment for him. And he's doing the dishes. Like, and you could do it with anything. That's why you put Chasing Amy Ben Affleck quotes over it.
Yep, exactly.
It's good as gold.
I want to do a quick shout out. I've had this campaign for a very long time. I'm going to continue this campaign. We all can agree that the national anthem sucks and that, that we need a better national anthem.
Yeah. The Rain as our national anthem?
No. I think just because it came up, she sang America the Beautiful. I think America the Beautiful, specifically the Ray Charles rendition of it, should become our new national anthem. Why, you might ask? Because I've done a lot of research on this. Did you know that America the Beautiful was written by a queer woman in the 1800s? So a song written by a gay woman performed by a blind black man about how beautiful the overall landscape of the United States is exactly the type of thing I can get behind, because it doesn't have a bunch of crazy nationalism tied into the song. It's just like, hey, man, look at all this beautiful grass and sky that we got around here.
Yeah, that's honestly... sold.
Yeah, it's a pretty good case. I've been campaigning for Tom Petty, I Won't Back Down, being the American national anthem for a long time. But
it's been 5 years plus, but yeah. But,
also, don't hate that. Yeah. All right, guys, just let me know. Let me know where I can vote.
Yeah, I mean, maybe mine's a little more aggro. Like, maybe, but like, America ain't backing down. It's like one step.
Yeah, dude, you could turn some people on that one.
One step below America, fuck yeah, being the national anthem. Yeah.
It is aggressive.
Yes.
I mean, I love Tom, but, you know, in certain contexts.
Right.
Might be aggressive.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. By now, I'm sure you've at least heard about Factor. But if you haven't tried it yet, let me tell you, as a guy who loves it, now is the time. Enjoy stress-free dining this spring with Factor's chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. With 35 weekly options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, plus over 60 add-ons, you'll stay fueled and feel fantastic all day long. Don't wait. Fuel up for your spring goals today with Factor. Factor offers you chef-prepared meals ready in just 2 minutes, so you can spend more time doing what you love this spring. Indulge in gourmet options like filet mignon, shrimp, and fresh veggies without the hassle of prep or cleanup. Customize your weekly meals to fit your schedule perfectly and enjoy the convenience of Factor's no-fuss, no-mess approach. Plus, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long with Factor's low-carbon footprint options. Factor is your go-to solution for fast, premium meals, eliminating the need for cooking and empowering you to savor every moment. So head to factormeals.com/onehit50 and use the code 150 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code 150, the words one hit and the number 50, at factormeals.com/onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
I'm Kyle Kukta, director of The Wound Within and co-host of Horror Movie Night Podcast.
And I'm Jeanette Wall, writer of The Wound Within and host of the Horrors of Love Podcast.
And we are currently crowdfunding on Seed and Spark to bring this short horror film to life.
A young woman discovers a mysterious lesion on her chest the morning after a disappointing tryst with a new lover. Throughout the rest of her day, she finds that she might not be the only one who's experiencing these unsightly symptoms.
Incentives include opportunities to be part of our podcasts, behind-the-scenes photo books, original soundtrack cassette, and more.
To contribute and make this film a reality, go to seedandspark.com and search The Wound Within.
So I also want to dive into some of the chart stuff that I pulled up.
Yes, please.
So...
Dude, I just pick a song and just hope Matt does research, because I didn't do jack shit. Listen to the song over and over again.
I didn't do that much research because we're about to get into a game that has nothing to do with Billy.
All right, good.
But so the song peaked at number 15 on the Hot 100. That was on February 21st, 1998. She was sandwiched between Paula Cole's I Don't Want to Wait at number 14.
Of course.
Classic jam.
God, yes.
And
also Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek theme song.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right. Pure Dawson.
Yeah.
And then the far less memorable KP and Envy's Swing My Way at 16.
Gonna need to check that one out. Yeah.
A few of the other ones in the top 20 were like Third Eye Blind's How's It Gonna Be, Busta Rhymes' Dangerous, Wyclef Jean's Gone Till November, Chumbawamba's Tub Thumping, and Robin's Show Me Love. Pretty solid top five happening here. At number five, we had Been Around the World by Puff Daddy and the Family. Not the best Puff Daddy song, but still a pretty good one.
Is it sample Been Around the World and I Can't Find My Baby.
I think that's the one.
Lisa Stansfield, right? Yeah.
Number four was Leanne Rimes, How Do I Live?
Yeah.
Oh.
Number three.
I want to know.
Number three, Savage Gardens, Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Oh, dude. Oh, my God. Okay. Never mind. I'm not going to talk about that.
Number
two,
we had Janet Together Again that had just slipped down from the number one position.
Good one.
And in number one, at number one was Nice and Slow by Usher. Okay. Right?
All right.
The next week, the very next week, Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On debuted at number one.
Wow. Whoa. Did Titanic come out right then?
Right then. So,
yeah.
Wow.
This led me down a very strange rabbit hole.
Okay.
Because I wanted to know how many songs have debuted at number one. And then I learned a bunch of history about songs which debuted at number one. So we're going to ask a couple questions. First of all, do you guys want to take a guess on how many songs as of March 31st, 2023 have debuted at number one?
Debuted at number one. Singles that have debuted at number one.
Okay. Well, I feel like I don't have like a good like frame.
Yeah. This is hard.
I mean, is it weekly? Is it a weekly thing?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Okay. I'm going to say 22.
I'll say less. I'll say 15.
65 songs have debuted at number one. Yeah.
What?
We're not going to go through every single one
of them. Since when? Since what
year? So like, that's my question number one. Who was the first person to debut at number one?
Okay. Give us like
I have a good guess.
Okay.
It has to be Elvis.
Kyle, do you want to throw a guess in there?
Elvis is pretty fucking good. But I'm going to go later. I'm going to say the Beatles.
So this is going to make the 65 all the more insane. The first time any artist debuted at number one was Michael Jackson's You Are Not Alone in 1995.
Whoa. And You Are Not Alone of all songs?
The lead single off of his greatest hits history album. Who was the second artist to debut at number one just a few weeks later?
Okay. You said what year did you say?
So it's still 95 here.
I'm going to keep it in the family and say Janet.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Kyle, you want to throw a guess in there?
95. Madonna. It's not right.
You were close. You were closer than Janet, I think. Actually, you're both in the same ballpark. Mariah Carey's Fantasy debuted at number one on September 30th.
Why is that closer than Janet?
I have no clue. As soon as I said that, I was like, wait, no, they're both equally good guesses. Who was the first American Idol contestant to debut at number one?
Gotta be my birthday buddy, Kelly Clarkson.
I'm going to say Clay.
Kyle's got it with Clay Aiken.
What?
This is the night.
Invisible?
No,
oh,
this is the night.
What?
Debuted at number one on June 26th. It was
upset I'm right about it.
It was the 11th song to do it. Now, this led to a trend where the next blank amount of songs to debut at number one were all American Idol contestants. How many in a row?
Oh, so it's got to be iTunes made that happen, right? Like the...
Possibly, yeah.
It had to be that it was like instantaneous gratification for the millions of people who watched American Idol to then...
I was just trying to figure out the logistics of how you do the, how you get to number one before anybody hears the song. And it's because American Idol was there and on and people heard it before you had to... That's fucking crazy.
It's probably like 25 or something. You're saying how many...
Oh, yeah. What was the question?
So how many winners in a row... debuted at number one after Clay Aiken.
How many winners in a row?
I went to...
That's full season winners. That's like...
Yeah.
Because Clay didn't win.
Yeah, he came in second place to Ruben Studdard.
Yeah.
Five.
Chris, you want to throw a guess in there?
Yeah, I'll say 11.
So it's three.
Oh.
I guess technically four if you count Clay as part of it. But it was Clay, Fantasia with I Believe, Carrie Underwood with Inside Your Heaven, and Taylor Hicks with Do I Make You Proud. And then we never again saw a...
When did Daughtry happen? That's what happened.
I thought you were going to say, and then we never again saw Taylor Hicks.
Well,
no, I don't know what
that might come up in a later question. So I've got three or four more questions here. Who was the first artist to debut at number one back to back?
Oh, it's got to be Taylor
Hicks.
Yes, Taylor Hicks. When I say Taylor, I know you've heard of Swifties. I'm a Hicksie.
I'm a
Hicksie. Right, Kyle, you want to throw a guess
in there?
Him Hicks.
Dude, I think Taylor. I mean, Taylor Swift was. I think that's right. It's got to be right.
The answer is Drake with God's Plan, immediately followed by Nice for What.
Right.
Similarly, that was in 2018. Similarly, Ariana Grande had Thank You Next and Seven Rings both debut at number one back to back. But there were other songs that did not debut at number one that kind of filled in that inner space.
Okay.
Who's the most recent artist to debut at number one? I can give you this much. It was in January of 2023.
The newest artist to debut at number one. It's got
let me clarify real quick. Who is the most recent? They are not a new artist.
Right. Okay. Not a new artist.
I'm trying to think of what came out in January.
Debuted at number
that
one.
I've been listening to.
So it's not a new artist.
Might be all over TikTok. Maybe a lot of people have covered this song in the last month or so.
You're going to make my head explode. Was it? It wasn't. I was going to guess.
I can see the album cover and I'm mad.
I was going to guess like Pink Panthers or somebody, one of those like TikTok stars, but I guess it's not her.
No, who is it?
It was Miley Cyrus's Flowers.
Oh, sure. Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's not actually what I was thinking.
All right. So these are the last two questions for you guys.
Okay.
How many artists that have debuted at number one qualify for being on an episode of One Hit Thunder?
Out of the 65?
It's 65 songs. It's not 65 artists. But.
Right. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Right,
so
right.
Taylor Hicks is one. Mm-hmm. Fantasia is two.
Nope. Yeah. Fantasia didn't pull it off. Fantasia had a couple top 20 hits.
Really?
How long did it take you to? I mean, you probably knew a handful of them.
Most of them I recognized the names. And if I didn't recognize the name, I would immediately Google them and see if they had more than a hit.
Was basically 65. Out of the 65? Mm-hmm. I would say eight.
I'm going to go to five.
Two.
Ooh. Who are they?
Who are they?
Taylor Hicks, you correctly guessed. And I will never know how to pronounce this name, but the DJ who did Harlem Shake.
Oh, Bauer.
Bauer. Maybe. Harlem Shake. Then the last one. Wow. What artist has been involved, or I'll say featured, what artist has been featured in the most number one debut singles?
Featured,
including their own, yes.
Because I was gonna say Drake.
Yeah, I think Drake.
Drake is correct with seven, seven Damn. Songs, and then second is a three-way tie between Taylor Swift, Ariana Grande, and BTS, all with five number one debuts under their belt on the Billboard Hot 100.
All right. Well, That was a fun thing that had absolutely nothing to do
nothing
with
Billie
Myers because she peaked at number 15.
Bro, but she's perfect. She's my number one. I love Billie.
I dove a little bit more into her music. The song Tell Me was like a semi-popular song by her. It's a little more rockin' than Kiss the Rain.
Yeah. Okay.
Almost like a cross of like rockin' and psychedelic sounding. There's a little hint of Alanis in her delivery in that song. Some of the inflection of her voice and just the overall feel of the song. It was all right. I watched her play Kiss the Rain on Jules Holland. It was all right.
Nice.
And I believe she's even gone on the record of being kind of, I won't say upset because upset sounds bad, but that when the Tell Me single charted way lower than Kiss the Rain, she like already had a feeling of like, this isn't going to last. Like she said, like her heart kind of sank when the second single barely even cracked into the top 40 because she knew that was not a good sign that she was already steadily declining out of the charts. Instead of going up higher.
Yeah, I mean, and you said that the next music sounded more like housey and dancey, and then the second single, Chris saying, it was a little more raucous. Is this one of those singles that felt like it was sort of stand out, like truly like radio single, or
this,
you know,
this
crafted to be a hit while the rest of the album is sort of like whatever.
This was definitely the song to me.
Sure.
When I listened to it, I can't speak for Chris's opinions, but when I went through, like, I just went on Spotify, went on her page and hit shuffle and had it playing for like an hour or two while I was like cleaning and doing stuff around the house. And I did have to keep checking to make sure I was still on the right page because it was very housey. But, you know, there's probably three or four versions of Kiss the Rain that are on her page from different, like, uploads and compilations and stuff.
Chasing Amy remix.
Or... Yeah, I mean, every time Kiss the Rain came on that mix, I was like, ooh, this song is the standout right now for me still.
Yeah,
and I'm going to say something pretty, I don't know. I don't know if this could be controversial in here. I don't even know if I like Kiss the Rain. I think I kind of like the comedy of it, the fact that it's so dramatic and does sound like a song that you would put some, you know, cheesy lines from a movie over top of from like the 90s. And yeah, it sounds, it's Dawson.
It does its job.
Yeah. But for its job, there's just so many songs I would choose over it. I would choose I Don't Want to Wait for Our Lives to Be Over over this, you know?
So here's what I'll say.
I understand that.
I had two thoughts about this song, and I'm glad that we've started this conversation. Thought number one was that I think this song is all chorus, no verse in my mind. Like the verses, I'm like, all right, let's just get to this chorus.
Yeah.
The song that it reminded me the most of that we've already covered on this show in a similar vein was kind of Insensitive. This reminds me a lot of Insensitive, where it's like the verses are all right, it's fine. The chorus will get into your head and not leave it. But like, neither one of these songs made me want to like run out and buy albums by their respective artists or anything.
There was a lot of music like that structurally around this time.
Yes.
Right? Like that is such a nice, like, I think of, like, even though it doesn't quite sound the same, but it's doesn't sound the same.
Yeah.
It is Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?
Yes.
Like that's
Paula
Cole.
I mean, there
you go. Yeah. That's right. That's right. And I think of like I kind of think Sonny Came Home's a little bit of that too.
Yeah.
Though
it's
the
more the
are
chorus
better,
but yeah.
Than most of the ones we're talking about, but it is so much chorus.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the drama of the songwriting that Chris was kind of referring to. It's like there is this big surge and you know that you're going to get a hit if you have this storytelling and drama in the chorus, because you can get on a soundtrack or you can, you know,
well, that was
chart,
I was going to say that too. It feels like music written to be featured in a trailer or on a teen drama or any of that stuff. I mean, literally the day that we're recording this, I jokingly wrote a thing about like, if you just write some Imagine Dragons sounding music that just states very specific things happening, there's a really good chance Netflix will buy it to use for like one of their dating shows. Like I think that there is always, for as long as music is around, there is definitely people who are writing songs with a very clear focus in mind. And sometimes that clear focus is this song generic enough that it will apply to anything that you put it underneath for a film or a commercial or
and
a TV
songwriters
show.
Get those cues, those sheets of what is needed where it's like, to an exact point, we need a song, a mid-tempo acoustic-based song that expresses emotion, and it takes place in a scene in the rain. You know, like people get things, like songwriters get things like that, especially if you're someone that is in that line of work to try to write those kind of songs for those goofy ass, TV shows like the reality shows and the game shows Matt watches or whatever. So.
Anything that needs a drone transition between locations on MTV, like any of that, with just enough time to put the caption of what the song is at the bottom.
That's
and
what
then
it's
go to
so
the next thing.
It's so fucking funny to me. It's my favorite thing, whether I'm watching Jersey Shore or Love Is Blind or any other reality show in between. It'll literally be like they get into a screaming match, and they storm out, and then like the first line of the song is just like, I think I lost my best friend. Like, it's always like, man, they just found whatever is the exact lyric to convey the emotion that they want the audience to feel in that second.
Yeah.
Well, the Billy Myers, title... I'm sorry we barely talked about you, but I think we got a good episode, well, I guess.
The song title alone, the last thing I would say about it is that the song title alone, matched with the feel of the song, is so, I don't know, is emotive the word? Or it just brings so much imagery to your head. Kiss the rain, what does that mean? Well, your heart is broken. You go outside. The weather is matching the way you're feeling. The rain is pouring down. The rain is on your cheeks like tears. You're kissing the rain because that's all you can kiss. It's touching your lips because the person you love isn't there to touch your lips. It's all these like very visual things that all come from those three words. Kiss the rain.
Yeah.
That's
what I get from it. Oh, it's true. And like the other thing that I did want to jump upon was like, or touch upon, not jump upon. That's not the phrase.
It can be.
Was that there is this like trope that's not as common about like people being on the, like songs about being on the phone and like just a little bit of voice alteration to like make sure that it sounds like you're on the other line. Mm. And I wish that there was a little bit more of that in this time period. There's enough. But I love that. Yeah. It's like, it reminds me of like those rock bands that would sing into the microphone.
Sure.
And I like to imagine that there's this subtle way that Billy Myers does this when she performs live to sound like she's on the phone.
She actually walks off stage and they put a phone on speakerphone and just turn the microphone down towards it real quick.
Yes.
Well, Kyle, before we do the segment of the show where we normally talk about if the song is a thunder or a blunder, something that's certainly not a blunder is the Seed and Spark campaign that you've got going on for a new short film. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Thank you. It is a complete parody of Dawson's Creek. So I am working with my friend Jeanette Wall, who hosts a podcast called Horrors of Love, and they have written their first horror script. And we've been friends for over a decade. And it's a really personal story. It's an allegory for addiction recovery called The Wound Within. And our stylistic approach is sort of like Cronenbergian body horror meets like 70s nobody listening to women tropes. That kind of happens. And we're really excited about it, but we need help making it. So we started a Seed and Spark campaign. And if you go to seedandspark.com and search The Wound Within, you'll be able to read more about our story, about Jeanette's writing of the script, about my directing approach, and some of the cool incentives that we offer, which are some things personal. We'll make, you know, personalized playlists for you. We'll also have a cassette single or a cassette soundtrack, limited cassette soundtrack release, because we have an original score for the film. We also have, there's a bunch of stuff on there, but we're really excited about it. It's a little bit of a departure for me, but it's still in the vein of films that I really enjoy. And would like to kind of bring their story to life in that vein. So if you go to seedandspark.com and search The Wound Within, you'll be able to check us out and support us any way you can, whether it be fiscally or if you just follow the campaign, it goes a long way. Seed and Spark's a great platform for artists, and they support artists whose campaign gains followers and traction. They will support in other ways, like I think they're like, somebody was telling me that they hand out hard drives if you get like 1,000 followers. So, I mean, like anything and everything helps, even if you just share our campaign elsewhere. So I appreciate you letting me come on and talk our Seed and Spark campaign. But even more so, as much as I like to let people know what we're doing and ask for help, I love Kissing the Rain. So I'm going to, you already know how I feel about this song. I don't think I could say it enough. It's a complete blunder. But that's that. I mean, I could talk. I'm going to shut up. You guys tell me what you think.
Wait, so are you serious that you're going with blunder on this or thunder?
No, God, no. Yeah. Thunder.
All right, because I'm going to go blunder on it. Like, I like the song, but and I like Billy Myers, the person, from the little bit that I was able to read about her. But yeah, when I had that playlist on, I was like, it's really, for me anyway, it's kind of just the Kiss the Rain chorus and not much else.
I didn't want to affect the way I feel about the song. I refuse to. Ignorance is bliss, as they say. So that's where I'm at. Chris, what did you think?
So mad respect, of course, to Billy Myers, of course, to Desmond Child, but especially to Eric Bazillion. We all know I'm an Eric Bazillion stan. So
we're all bazillionaires here.
Yeah, yes, I'm a bazillionaire. That's what bazillionaire for sure. But, oh, it's going to break my heart to say it. I think I got to go Blunder only because if I don't even really like the hit and then I go deeper and like you, Matt, I put her on, listen to a lot of her music, and I don't think I would intentionally listen to Billy Myers. It's just not my thing.
I was going to say, I do want to clarify. We've heard artists where we've been like, yo, these songs are flat out bad.
No, it's not bad.
I don't think any of the songs are bad. They're just not for me. Mm-hmm. If you're into like more of a dance club type music, check out some of her later tracks. If you absolutely are like all in on Kiss the Rain, you'll probably like the rest of the Growing Pains album. But I was already kind of just like, I really like the chorus to this song and I didn't have much else going into it. So like the album being a little bit more of the same for me was just kind of like, okay, this is not Matt Kelly music is what I've landed on. Until we get to the 1998 album draft and I need a fifth album, then all bets are off.
Well,
it's in the running.
Sorry that I couldn't throw thunder on Billy Myers' name, but it won't stop me from kissing the rain.
Been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Ofalios of the bands Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Very Nervous System off the Punchline EP, So Nice to Meet You. Visit punchline.com for merch, tour dates, and news. We're on Patreon now. Become a patron and get bonus content, early episodes, and a chance to vote on future episodes at patreon.com/OHTpodcast. Do you want to start a podcast? Contact Chris or myself at weknowpodcasting.com for how we can make your show sound as professional as possible. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. And tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder. Gets more strange with each scene change, like a key change. We modulate and sing. Don't you give up on me.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like the Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.